This is KRCU's Going Public. I'm Clayton Hester. If you've heard any of this week's news, you know it's been a tumultuous week. We're dedicating today's episode to speaking with Dr. Jason Sides, political science professor here at Southeast Missouri State University, about some of the electoral issues and some of the issues that led to some of the violence at the Capitol on Wednesday.
Well, I think one of the things, looking at Georgia, Tuesday night, one of the things that kind of struck me was the fact that Senator Loeffler did so poorly. What's striking about that is that Senator Loeffler lost to Reverend Warnock. And I think one of the things that people are going to focus on when they start to diagnose why she lost was the fact that as a candidate, she really wasn't the best candidate that the GOP in Georgia could have put forward. She also had a scandal where she was involved in some accusations of insider trading. She was somebody who didn't really have a strong base in the Republican movement. And so I think, what you saw with her is that she did not perform as well as somebody else might have. So it just gets back to the fact that candidate quality matters. Now, what you see with Reverend Warnock is somebody who was a much better candidate from his side of the aisle. And so out of the four people running on Tuesday, he did the best by far, partly because he was more energetic. He was out there appealing to more people. But he also very early on capitalized on President Trump's demand for a $2,000 check. So once President Trump came out and said, we need $2,000 checks for the public, the Warnock campaign was very quick to kind of say, yeah, vote for me, and those $2,000 checks will be coming. Senator Loeffler and Perdue were kind of in a weird position there, and so they delayed taking an affirmative stance for those checks. And I think why that matters for Loeffler is that her voters were some Republican voters who are in economically marginalized communities, who've been hit hard by the COVID restrictions. And so for those folks, I think when they, saw her waffle on increasing the COVID relief checks, I think some of those folks stayed home, and that ultimately cost her some support. Now, if you look at the other race, the Perdue-Ossoff race, that one was closer. Again, candidate quality matters. Perdue was a better Republican candidate than Loeffler. I think the problem for Senator Perdue was that he also got involved in some questions of stock dealings. So it didn't impact him as strongly, but he still had that lingering over him. Again, he was likely impacted by the decline of Republican voters in marginalized communities who were looking for more than $600 to help them in this time where many of their jobs were shut down. So, what you saw was you saw the Republicans put two candidates who weren't very strong up. In most years, the party affiliation would have been enough to push them over the edge. But given that the Democratic Party is doing better in Georgia, that wasn't enough this time, and so they lost both seats.
So would you say it does it reflect on the party's situation in Georgia, or would you say it is largely governed by, the situation that it's in?
I think one thing you have going on in Georgia is that, just listening to some of the people out of Atlanta, out of Savannah and some other places, there's kind of a rift within the Republican Party. And so I think that lack of cohesion caused them to be ineffective this time around. One of the interesting things that happened between the general election and the runoff election was that the Democrats added roughly about 100,000 new voters from November until now. The Republicans only 5,000. And so what's interesting about that is that it kind of illustrates the extent to which the party in Georgia isn't functioning as well as it probably could. that has a lot of consequences. One of them being that you don't identify new voters and enlarge your voting base, but also that you are going to be forced to put candidates up who may not be the best, but who are rather selected because they can kind of appeal to most of the factions within the Republican Party. And I think that's where you end up, is picking suboptimal outcomes.
And perhaps a segue into kind of a conversation next about the situation that broke this week with the Capitol and the siege that happened there. What sort of things, with Democratic majority and a Democratic president, now in both houses, do we think that this could cause a repercussion as far as maybe Democrats unite around the issue of kind of stopping these forces that have kind of developed? What do you think that they're going to be tackling, given current events right now, since they do have that control?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's interesting is, as a result of Warnock and Ossoff winning Tuesday night, we now find ourselves in a 50-50 Senate, right? And on its face, that would suggest that the Democrats are going to have a little bit more leeway in determining where they want to go. The problem for the Democrats is going to be that you still have Joe Manchin, John Tester in the Senate, right? Manchin is pretty much an old blue dog Democrat. On some issues, he's actually fairly conservative. Tester is more of a labor Democrat as well. You also have Sherrod Brown from Ohio, who's a little bit more progressive, but also is a good politician and realizes that, hey, I have to run in Ohio. So there's three votes right there that would be a constraint on how far left the Democrats could go. Also, you have the two senators from Arizona. You are going to have Senator Kelly, who is a little bit more liberal on gun control. Other issues, it's not entirely clear where he's at yet. But again, he's going to have to run fairly soon because this was a special election for him the last time around. Arizona is still a fairly center-right state. If he goes too far left, he's going to be out. So, I mean, on paper, yeah, we might think that, you know, President-elect Biden is going to have a lot of leeway to enact policies that are going to appeal to Democrat activists. But I think the reality is that there's at least four or five senators who are going to have a hard time going along with some of what was discussed during the primaries. And even, you know, Senator Casey in Pennsylvania would be a restraining force, to the extent that that's a state with a large number of blue-collar workers. Depending on how things shift, he could be even at risk there. So I think what you're going to have to see for the Democratic Party is you're going to have to see somebody kind of say, look, we need to get done what we can done, not try to force through what we promised in the primary. Because here's, you know, one thing we know. There's going to be a midterm election in 2 years, and traditionally the president's party loses in those midterms, right? Now, Trump lost some seats in the House, but he didn't lose the Senate in 18. And that was kind of unusual. But if Biden pushes too far left, he's surely going to go back to the pattern of losing seats. And at that point, he becomes a lame duck.
And when talking about this, of course, there comes an immediate factor as well with the ultimate consequences that have come out of this week as well, with talk about either impeaching President Trump again or invoking the 25th Amendment, which of course kind of places the onus of reacting to the current situation, to the outcomes of January 6th, either, you know, on those in the cabinet, on the executive branch, or those in the legislature. Do you foresee that there's a chance that those in the House and Senate right now would, you know, basically take action against the president to prevent him from serving out the weeks he's got left?
I mean, I really don't know what they're going to do in the House and in the Senate, right? Their calculations are going to be their own, you know, and whether they're thinking of the short term or the long term is going to impact how they approach that particular question. Now, I think for the state of our democracy in the long term, Pence and some of the cabinet members stepping up would be the better solution in the long term of those two. Impeachment or the 25th Amendment, you know, impeachment, I think, is going to exasperate some of the division that's already there. And I think we have to see our leaders kind of tone down the rhetoric. Now, if Pence and some of the cabinet members were to step forward and say, as a matter of principle, here's why we're moving forward, I think that would be a different situation than trying to run through an impeachment in 2 weeks. But do I think that's likely to happen? I don't think so. You know, what would be ideal is if the president went to Mar-a-Lago for the next 2 weeks and just played golf and we didn't hear anything from him. That would be the best thing. I think, you know, the impeachment option, you still have, you know, 74 million people who voted for the president. And given that we are in the unique political environment we're in, I don't know that that's the best option for the long-term health of our democracy.
You know, kind of factoring in the outcomes of President Trump's statements and rhetoric around the elections, you know, when talking about Georgia, of course, earlier, this routes in because there was some talk about whether or not Trump, through his accusations of election fraud, created an unintended circumstance. You know, if it's all rigged, then why bother with the voting and such? Do you think that ultimately has a lasting side effect in terms of Trump voters or those who don't have a particularly confident view of the democratic process, especially considering those, you know, that the Trump supporters that showed up to the Capitol on January 6th?
You know, there's like three kind of things that we have to separate from one another, right? One of them is going to be that if we separate the Georgia voters from the other, you know, from the people who are at the Capitol, whether they were in the Capitol building or they were in DC marching, if we separate the Georgia voters from those folks and look at the Georgia voters, I do think it's the case that President Trump saying, well, it's rigged, they're going to take it from us again, did minimize some interest in voting among his voters in Georgia, right? Some of those folks who might be in a more economically precarious situation, who may not be as secure, are going to look at, you know, what the president's saying and say, okay, the whole system is against us. It doesn't matter what we do. And so they likely stayed home, some measure of them. Now, given how close these two races were, that mattered. But I think the other thing that the president did was, you know, he didn't coordinate with McConnell regarding those stimulus checks, right? And so he kind of jammed up McConnell and jammed up Perdue and Loeffler by coming out and saying, hey, $2,000 is what we need. And he put them in a bad situation. Now, we do know that some of Trump's base voters are folks who are more economically precarious or in more economically precarious situations. And so putting those two folks in a situation where they were saying $600 for a day while the president was yelling for two created cognitive dissonance that likely also demobilized some of his voters, right? They were probably thinking, hey, Trump's not on the ballot and these two only want to give me $600. You know, my whole life is worth more than $600 and that's all they want to do, right? I mean, that's going to have an impact as well. Here's the other thing too. If you're also telling people that it's rigged, it's crooked, you're also kind of turning people against those folks who are administering the elections in Georgia. those were Republicans. So you add fuel to this, you know, conflict within the party that's there. There were some people who on conservative websites said, hey, we got to make these people pay, meaning Republicans. And so some of those folks stayed home thinking they were going to discipline the leaders of the Georgia GOP. So you had that going on. So yeah, I mean, the president's conduct in Georgia leading up to that election was not what you needed from the leader of your party if you wanted to win those elections. Now, if it's all about you as the president, then the conduct can be framed to be more consistent with where you're placing your emphasis. But from the standpoint of winning elections, yeah, that was just a bad pattern of behavior. Right now, here's the other thing. We talk about what led to what we saw on Wednesday. You know, the president since the election has talked about how he had this big, beautiful landslide victory taken away from him. And so we're in a situation where there's a lot of mistrust in institutions anyway. And for 2 months, the president has been kind of throwing more fuel on this mistrust with these claims about how it was rigged, they had ballots here, you know, where did the ballots go and stuff like that, right? He gives that speech Wednesday morning and he just throws a match to a flammable situation. And so I think, you know, if you look at what led to some of those folks going inside the Capitol Wednesday, some of that has to be laid directly at the feet of the president who carelessly, you know, just started using an incendiary language that, in conjunction with the era of mistrust that we're in, just, you know, was a horrid, horrid decision. Now, you talked about like the roots of this problem, right? I think, you know, one thing a lot of people just want to frame this as, okay, this is only Trump. It's only the people who were seduced by Trump. When Trump goes away, we'll be done with the problem. And I don't think that's the case. I think we've been in about a 20-year period where we've seen institutions perform at a less than optimal level. We've seen leaders not perform to our expectations. And I think all of that has created a sense of institutions don't work. We can't trust our leaders. Also, the political elites are using inflammatory language for a number of years. That also contributes to a coarsening environment. So I think what you had was you had a president who very carelessly you know, played with matches in an inflammatory situation. And I think that's part of it, but I think we have to look at the bigger root of the problem, which is how do we establish trust in our institutions again so that people don't feel as though these things are stolen or they're rigged?
Can you elaborate on some of the factors in recent history that play into this?
If you think about it, it's been a rough 20 years. I mean, we've gone from 9/11, right? That shook people's trust in government because we saw a terrorist attack on American soil. We see the war in Iraq that's justified by, you know, weapons of mass destruction. We never find the WMD, right? We also have people making claims that Cheney and Bush knew 9/11 was going to occur. That weakened, you know, trust in government, right? So right there, you got a lot of factors that start chipping away at the foundations. Well, then you also end up with the housing market recession, right? That's going to be a problem. People are losing their houses. We're in a cycle where a lot of jobs are being shipped overseas, so people are losing the middle class lifestyle they have. That's, you know, all these things are chipping away, right? Chip, chip, chip. Not only that, but then we also see that we're going to have, you know, this healthcare plan that's going to help people, costs go up, that chipped away. You know, all of it is just going to be a group of factors that came together to make President Trump possible. And the problem, I think, for the country was that President Trump, unfortunately, didn't have an interest in what his future assessment would be, right? He was worried about the here and the now. I won that election. I'm going to have that election. They stole it from me. He was worried about the here and now. And that, unfortunately, was allowed him or enabled him to do a disservice to his voters. Had he been thinking more long term, he could have thought or might have thought, you know what, I was robbed, but then like Andrew Jackson just went away. And then for 4 years was kind of mobilizing his supporters to achieve the policy goals he claimed he wanted to achieve. But instead, he took that vision of American government, those policy goals, and just chucked them out the window because he had to be right. And the fact that he wasn't interested in history, wasn't a student of history, I think is what made that possible and led him to the point where he was on Wednesday saying, you know, we got to go get these people.
We've been speaking with Jason Sides about the political events and electoral news breaking this week around the nation. Dr. Sides is a professor of political science at Southeast Missouri State University.